We're back.
Yep. Welcome to the Hell Money Podcast.
The Halloween Money Podcast.
Yep.
Happy Halloween.
It's spooky season.
Do you like Halloween?
Oh yeah, I love Halloween.
It's one of my favorite holidays, if not my favorite holiday. I really like Valentine's Day also because my favorite color is pink.
Yeah, I don't like Valentine's Day because I'm always single. So yeah, not a fan.
Indeed. Well, love is not just romantic. Love is like, you know, for your friends, for your family.
Yeah, but Valentine's Day is like single people to feel bad about themselves day. Like, listen, if your mom is calling you and telling you that you're a very special boy on Valentine's Day, like, NGMI.
That's what my mom sends me a card every year. And I'm like, oh, she loves me. But Halloween, I mean,
Halloween's great. Halloween is secular. Right. Mm-hmm. So like,
well,
you know,
it's pagan, but yeah,
it's pagan, whatever.
Which is, they don't even give a fuck.
Like, I mean, the modern secularity is basically pagan. You know, we worship our machine gods.
Yeah.
Let's see. And then also you just get this excuse to dress up, which is incredibly
it's
fun.
Incredible.
Like there's a fun activity. Right. And it's good for the kids. Kids get to like wander around and like beg for candy, you know, mm-hmm. which is great. I remember when I was a little kid, just having coming home with a massive bag of candy and then eating it over the next, you know, 4 days. It must have been like 2,000 calories worth of sugar every day.
I actually have never liked candy. Mm. And so I would go do Halloween. Like I would go trick or treat mostly as a social exercise, mm-hmm. get the gang together, go around all the houses. But then I would just like throw out the candy or give it to someone else.
Terrible. Yeah.
Because I wasn't into it.
I always felt bad. Some kids, they would get their candy home and then their parents would be like, oh, you can't eat all of that. And then they would take it and then meter out the candy.
Well, you have to. It's fucking reckless.
Who gives a shit? Having a kid eat like a pound of candy every day for like 3 or 4 days, it's not going to do shit. Once a year, like NBD.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm just happy. I have opportunities to dress up now as an adult. That's really what I like.
Well, that's like the other thing is that Halloween is a holiday that's like great for the kids. Mm-hmm. And then once you turn like 16, you just immediately transition to getting like drunk with your friends on Halloween.
Yeah.
So it's a good for the kids and a good for the adults.
I transitioned to a slutty Halloween at 14.
Oof. Yeah. Oof.
And
yeah.
Then and then drunk Halloween at like 16 or 17.
Right. Good. I'm sure there's some overlap there.
Obviously. Yeah. It's continued.
Yeah. It's a continuation. I also love the like the men's costumes are like kind of normal.
Yeah, so normal.
And then the women's costumes are all like slutty ex.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like slutty B, like slutty tax accountant.
I used to say like slutty nerd, like my culture is not your costume. Like uh-huh. Some of us are sexy nerds 365.
Right. Yeah,
you know?
That's right. Yeah.
Anyway, what are we talking about today?
Today we're talking about spooky Bitcoin.
I'm actually scared. Ooh. I'm actually scared of this list. This list, like, there are...
That was some great tape right there, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're talking about, like, things that are, like, worrying for Bitcoin's future or ways that Bitcoin could potentially break in the future.
Right. Many of these are, like, I tweeted asking people what their concerns were for Bitcoin. I feel like I thought of this because Bitcoin recently went up. It's like at 34 or 35K right now. And mm-hmm. I got scared.
Yeah.
That was my primary emotion. I was like, I don't want to look at it. Like, well, I don't want to check. I don't want to look at it. And I was like freaked out and I couldn't really figure out why. I mean, I kind of know why, but like it was just a bizarre emotion to feel.
This is like your first bull market, right?
Yeah. That I'm like, right. I mean, I did have like the bull run that kind of like orange pilled me, I guess. Like, technically was my first bull run, mm-hmm. but from actually just like being integrated into, like, I didn't know any other Bitcoiners at that
right.
time. I wasn't like culturally into it.
Yeah.
I wasn't on Bitcoin Twitter.
Yeah. And well, now you have more Bitcoin than you did in the last bull run.
Yeah.
And so that, I mean, this is not my first bull run. So I've been into Bitcoin since 2013. Immediately after I got into it, there was like a bull run up to like something before it crashed down because of Mt. Gox. But I like definitely remember those early days, like after I had bought some Bitcoin, being like just like watching the price go up and down and calculating how my net worth was fluctuating is wacky. Like,
yeah,
that's a very weird feeling. You're just like, I just made money. in like 10 minutes, like paper gains, obviously. And like, oh, I just lost money in 10 minutes. Like it's very strange.
Yeah. I think like what freaks me out, well, first of all, one of the things I realized recently when I was in Amsterdam talking to a bunch of, you know, OG Bitcoiners is, okay, first of all, they all say right in the beginning, they say like, oh, I've been in Bitcoin since 2013. Yep. I'm like, terrible OPSEC. Mm-hmm. Do not go around telling random hoes at the party. I mean, I understand why they do it, like to some extent, because it's a signal.
Well, it's also just like people talk about getting into Bitcoin, how they got into Bitcoin, like.
But it's like it was something that people kind of consistently kept doing, like, I've been here since 2013. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been here since before, blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
And I got to a point where I would like interrupt and be like, I was in high school in 2013. Like, I don't care.
Uh-huh.
Like, because it's just, I think it's bad OPSEC. I don't think you should tell people that like openly all the time. I mean, this is on our list, but like you and I kind of have terrible OPSEC. We're like completely doxxed.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Like people know where we are.
Yep.
That's scary.
I don't worry about it so much. You know, my Bitcoin is very hard to get at. You're not going to have a good time if you try to get my Bitcoin. It's like there are multiple like layers of security. There's multiple layers of security by obscurity. Mm-hmm. Like you're just not, you're
there's
just
like
not
some
getting
alligators in the I mean, moat.
You can
on the
fucking,
way there.
Fucking torture me. Like I will not even have the ability to give you my Bitcoin. So.
Okay. Yeah. Flex. Weird flex, but okay.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Okay. So now I get to, I've been doing like this all day.
She's her costume is a cross between Data, the android from Star Trek: The Next Generation, and Princess Leia.
This reads Princess Leia to you.
I'm Chewbacca, but like shaved Chewbacca.
This is what Chewbacca looks like under all that.
That's
fur.
Right. Yeah, yeah, huge Wookiee dick.
Should we get into the list?
Yeah, we have a long list.
We have a long list.
Spooky Bitcoin things.
Yeah.
What's at the top of our list?
The top of our list is quantum computing breaking Bitcoin, which I have absolutely no response to.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, the basic idea here is that much of Bitcoin security relies on hashes, which are these one-way cryptographic functions that take a bunch of data and produce a small digest, and the output, the digest data, is different for all the input.
Mm-hmm.
The names are really evocative. Like, a hash function is named after like a hash, the dish, where you just take a bunch of stuff in and like chop it up and like stir it up.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. That's cute.
And then like the stuff that comes out is like the digest, which you can kind of think of as like in Star Wars, there's the Sarlacc, the Sarlacc pit.
I've never seen Star Wars.
You dress as Princess Leia and you haven't seen Star Wars?
No, I'm not dressed.
But yeah, it's like pit, giant stomach. So the hash function kind of digests the stuff up and comes out with this like shriveled little turd. And the idea, so Bitcoin relies on hashes. It also relies on elliptic curve cryptography, which is kind of similar to a hash function in the sense that you like basically multiply two numbers together. They're not numbers, they're elliptic curve points, so they're a little weird, but you do it such that it's one way, such that once you have the multiplied numbers, the product of the two numbers, you can't go back to the two numbers that were multiplied.
Right.
Kind of can't be reversed.
That's the encryption.
Bitcoin doesn't really use encryption. Okay. It uses signatures.
Mm.
So encryption is where you actually encode something such that somebody who intercepts it can't decode it. You sort of create a hidden secret message. Signatures are a little bit different. They're sort of like a way of one person saying like, I made this message, or like authorize or approve this message.
Mm.
And the signature says, hey, this public key, this message, and this signature all match. The signature was made by the person who had the private key associated with the public key over this message.
So the way that quantum would break that is it just does it really fast?
So quantum computers are, non-quantum computers are called classical computers.
First of all, actually, are quantum computers real?
Roughly no, but let me get into that in a second. So what was I saying about signatures? Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, so a quantum computer, normal computers, classical computers, they use, to a first approximation, wires that carry the number one or zero. And then they combine all these signals, these signals expressed in voltage, in all these wires in different way through these things called gates, like, for example, an and.
A quantum gate.
No, no, wait. We're not at the quantum computers yet. So they combine things through gates, and the sort of model of computation is well understood, and it's pretty straightforward. You just do these combinations of ones and zeros, and you can implement things like adding numbers together, doing logical operations on numbers. And that's basically what our computers do, more or less. A quantum computer, and one of these ones or zeros is in a classical computer is called a bit.
Right.
And a quantum computer does computation on qubits, which are sort of like bits, since they're like one and zero. They have like one and zero states, but they sort of have these like superposition states that are like multiple combinations of states and like probabilities over that states, those states. So I don't have the best grasp of how quantum computers work, but sort of they let you do kind of like a bunch of parallel calculations with all these qubits before you finally collapse down the qubits. You like read their values and get the result. That's like a very hand-wavy, imprecise sort of definition. But the important part of that definition is that a large enough quantum computer, and I'll explain what I mean by large, is able to do... for a large enough quantum computer...
The physical comedy in this episode is like,
out of control.
It's insane.
Yeah. The entendres are double, they're triple, they're quadruple entendres. A large enough quantum computer can essentially... Using signatures and a public key as an example, they can factor out the private key from that public key or produce a signature that from like produce a signature without having the private key.
I see.
And there's also they mess with hash functions a little bit. They don't break hash functions, but they using something called Grover's algorithm, they can achieve a slight speed up on calculating a hash function.
Do quantum computers break everything, though?
Yes, everything. All
that was always my understanding. Yeah. Is I was like, well, if it breaks Bitcoin, it's like so over.
It breaks all modern widely used cryptography. So for example,
you can't do anything.
HTTPS. When you connect to a website, almost all connections to the internet are encrypted using SSL, secure sockets layer, or something. I forget the name. There's like two. One of them's old.
SSL, I recognize.
And it breaks the encryption with that. So all of a sudden, a third party... You know, the internet is basically an untrusted network, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You connect to your bank, and you're connecting through God knows what kind of infrastructure run by God knows who. And you rely on security. You rely on the encryption of that connection to be secure. And quantum computers can a large enough quantum computer can trivially break that encryption as well.
Okay.
So
worried, but like, I feel like quantum, I always compartmentalize in the AI bucket where it's like the people that are worried about AI. I'm like, if it's that, it's over already. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Is that a fair, would you agree with that assessment personally?
Yeah, that's fair. And also I think it's very, similar to the AI doomerism in the sense that the AI doomers are, it's not some future thing that they know is going to happen. It is a sort of longer term speculative thing that relies on technology improving very, very fast, possibly faster than it will actually improve.
Right.
So let's get back to like what I mean by a large quantum computer. So quantum computers don't really exist in any useful form right now. There's a lot of research being done on quantum computers, but quantum computers these days, they're insane machines. Like they're like, you have to get the components incredibly cold to
right.
like not have enough noise or whatever. Quantum computers that exist have a very, very small number of qubits.
Is this related to the room temperature semi-superconductor?
I don't know. I imagine maybe having room temperature semiconductors would help with quantum computing, but I don't know for sure.
Hmm.
Yeah. So quantum computers that exist have a very small number of qubits. Those qubits are very noisy. They have a very high error rate. And so the size of a quantum computer is like the number of qubits and having a very low error rate for those qubits. And the quantum computers that would be needed to break elliptic curve cryptography, which is what Bitcoin uses, are almost entirely speculative at this point. They don't exist. And quantum computing has been a technology that has kind of been on the cusp of being revolutionary for a long time.
Right.
People talk about it a lot, I think, because the name is very sexy, right? Quantum computers, like, oh my God.
I know. I think, like, I like the strain of hippie physics nerds that are just like, bro, quantum.
Yeah.
Like, we're all just particles and waves.
Yeah. You know? Well, I've never met one of those people.
What? But. You've never met any of that? It's like white people with dreadlocks. You've never met any of these.
I've met white people with dreadlocks. They haven't talked to me about quantum
computers.
Quantum?
Are you kidding? Not quantum computers, but quantum as like an idea. They're like, bro. Like,
yeah, they have.
We've been right the whole time.
Yeah, like quantum physics and indeed like physics in general seems like it's like very fertile terrain for people to misunderstand it.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the kind of abstract, something that's more like philosophical and artistic on top. I like that stuff. I like the like sacred geometry, bro. We're all just fractals.
Yeah, we are all just fractals.
21. Oh, you snoozing it?
Yeah, I'm snoozing it. I'm blasting some snooze.
I think
got my cute little container.
Do you think the lip... Oh my God! It's inscription zero.
Oh yeah, it's like inscription zero.
Did you not even think about that?
No, I just like sugar skulls. I've been blasting snooze like a maniac. Snooze with these little tobacco pouches. Yeah, and it says inscription zero on it. You want one?
No.
Okay.
That would break the microchip.
Yeah, absolutely.
It actually is ironic. Sorry to derail. It is ironic that we're doing this week because I've been carnivore for like 4 days now.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's like, I'm actually more like you.
Yeah. How's that going?
It's so, I don't, like, it's stupid.
Yeah.
I don't, like, it makes no fucking sense. Yeah. Like, all I want is a Diet Coke and a cucumber. And like, I understand why the Diet Coke, it's like, whatever, like, aspartame, but like, there's no fucking way that a cucumber is bad for you. Like,
yeah.
And it's just, I'm just eating meat slop every day.
Yeah.
I'm like, this can't be right.
I love meat slop. I might do carnivore. I should do carnivore for like a week. See how it goes.
That's what I thought. Cause I love meat slop too. Mm-hmm. And I was like,
oh boy, does she.
I can't stop. No, I savory umami is like my favorite flavors by far. Mm-hmm. I don't like sweets. Like, I do like carbs, like noodles and stuff, but like mostly it's like bolognese. Like I like meat sauces. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was going to be awesome. And it's just, it sucks so bad.
Yeah. Anything that you're doing too much of is no fun at all.
Yeah. It's not good. Anyway.
And also like carbs, fat are very different, like craving type. You know, like when I just want a snack, I don't really want to eat like a piece of meat.
Yeah. Like,
you know?
A fucking like
I just
egg.
Want one of those delicious Asian apple pears. You know,
that's what I'm saying. That's why I'm craving like a cucumber. Like I'm like, I literally just want like something crispy, hydrating.
Yeah.
Like not just like mush.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Whatever. Any tips? I feel like I'm the biggest Bitcoin maxi I've ever been though.
Yeah, carnivore. That's true. Get carnivore tips.
I'm toxic
for Aaron.
As fuck.
Get in Aaron's DMs and spam her with carnivore tips, and also tell her that she's doing it wrong.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For just dumb
ass
reasons.
I'm sure I am doing it wrong, to be honest. Yeah. Like, but anyway, that's one of many. So we should keep going.
Yeah, yeah. But in general, like I'm just kind of not really worried about quantum computing. I think we'll probably have some notice if we ever get there. And it does create problems for everything else. So it's not like it would be some quiet thing that would only affect Bitcoin. It would be like everybody knows. And then there are post-quantum security or post-quantum encryption, post-quantum cryptography, I should say. And we could leverage that in Bitcoin. We could fork in something where we use, you know, post-quantum cryptography. And this would be some kind of, I'd have to think really hard on whether it would be a soft fork or a hard fork. We could probably do it with a soft fork.
A soft fork for quantum?
Yeah. Hmm. Soft landing, soft fork for quantum.
I think like I rank the quantum computing breaking Bitcoin thing very similarly to the global internet shutdowns one, which, sorry, I'm skipping around here a little bit, but like, you know, Bitcoin relies on the internet sort of working in, I think, at least a somewhat similar way to the way it works right now. Yep. You know, like if there's some major change, whether that's quantum or like just the fucking internet goes down, it's like, yeah, it's not like Bitcoin is internet money.
Yep.
To me, like, that just, it feels very contained within that sort of realm. Yep. And like, right. That's why I also, like, I always get on Bitcoiners for like not having anything except Bitcoin in terms of like a prep. Like, mm-hmm. they have like one chair, a desk, a computer, and yeah. then like Bitcoin. Yeah. Like, it's like, bro, you need like
yeah.
3 gallons of water.
For the apocalypse, you know? I'm literally just going to walk over to your house and be like, I don't have anything.
Yeah, you like, and like 30 other people, and I'm going to be like, make yourselves useful or get the hell out, you know? I already have a list, and if you got something I think you should get, well, I don't know if you should get it, but someone should get it, is the 3D printer that prints guns.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, we need that. If you yeah. showed up to the doomsday prep, like with that,
yeah.
if you brought that to the doomsday potluck, mm-hmm. you're in.
Yeah, absolutely. You're yeah, in. Yeah, 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 yeah. Or you just bring a gun and then, you know.
That too, but I don't like that. We don't need to go there yet, yeah. you know.
Yeah.
We're California Bitcoiners.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, and about my Bitcoin stash, you know, I may or may not have firearms. You know, just a little bit of.
He may or may not have a 3D printer that can.
Strategic ambiguity right
you
there.
You imagine someone's like banging on the door and like your 3D printer is like, going, you're like, come on.
So let's talk about global internet shutdowns. Yeah, yeah like yeah. you don't have the internet, you
it's
can't
over.
You can't Bitcoin. It's not over. It's not that over.
Well, it would come back, right?
Like, yeah, it'd come back eventually. Bitcoin yeah. is very disrupt is it it tolerates network splits. Like if you had If the internet was partitioned and half the world was on one side and half the world was on the other and significant hash power was on both sides, what you would do is you'd have two competing chains, right, on both sides. And then eventually they would talk to each other and one of them would get wiped out and the other one would be canonical because one of them just randomly on one side would probably be longer.
Wow. So it would be a war between the two, like... hash rates like
yeah whichever one was longer would be the victor once the internet merged and they were able to talk
what
to each
other. What percentage of the hash rate does the US have, do you know? It's pretty high, right?
I don't know. I want to say it's between 20% and 40%.
Okay, so yeah. we're doing pretty okay over here.
Yeah, we're doing pretty good.
We might win the hash war
yeah.
when the internet is subdivided into two hemispheres.
Yeah Proof of stake chains do not do well in that scenario. I think you get an irreconcilable split and then there's no way to resolve them. I'm pretty sure.
This kind of fits into the second point of loss of network infrastructure, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
like, yeah, that as being a concern as well. Like, yeah. what is that just like is that basically what we just said?
Global internet shutdowns. Yeah.
Global internet shutdown.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, as I said, you should have like 3 gallons of water. I think you're supposed to have 5 gallons of water per person for a week.
Okay.
So... that's good. Yep. Food yep. is usually easier to figure out. Yep. Like, you know, having just some beans or rice or something stocked,
mm-hmm.
maybe not all meat in yep. your freezer. Because yep. if the electricity goes down, it's going to be really hard.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that we can only prepare for so many things. I just happen to think that the internet is the future. So to me, Bitcoin, as long as that's the case, Bitcoin is a part of that. If the internet is not a part of our future for whatever reason, it's like, yeah, duh.
Yep.
Bitcoin doesn't work. Yep. We go to... something else.
The internet itself is also quite resilient. Like the internet doesn't really have centralized points of control. The internet gets partitioned, quietly partitioned all the time. And you do notice when you can't get to things on the other side of the partition. I'm not talking about like global partitions. I'm just talking about like local network failures. But the things on your side of the partition work, you know? So if, you know, if we had no satellite internet, and the transatlantic cables got cut, you know, you'd still be able to get to, Americans would still be able to get to American websites, Europeans would still be able to get to European websites, so.
It's fine. If I'm only on the internet with Americans, I'll live with that.
Yeah.
It's fine.
So then we get to CIA, NSA, Mossad created Bitcoin.
I actually kind of unironically believe that.
It's a little anti-Semitic, don't you think? That the
so
Jews
true.
Created Bitcoin.
Well, who else could?
I mean, they are very clever and always into money. So it's there you go. I'm a Jew. I just want to make that clear.
We can't do this bit right
I don't
now.
Look like one today. What do you mean? Because it's, of Israel?
Yeah, it's too topical.
No. This is exactly
I actually, my other suggestion for our episode topic, I was like, let's talk about Israel Palestine.
Yeah, I vetoed that. I don't want to get people mad at me. People can guess at what kind of opinion that I would have.
Yeah, guess in the comments.
In the comments.
Yeah, I mean, the CIA or the NSA or Mossad, whatever, creating Bitcoin, I'm fine with that. I actually think that's true. A little.
Yeah, I mean, regardless of whether it's true or not, it really doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter, right? Either way.
I think the people who have this concern are people who don't actually really understand how Bitcoin works. And so they're like, well, like maybe if Mossad or the CIA created it, there's some like backdoor.
They're going to do the kill switch.
There's a kill switch. There's a hidden vulnerability. There's some like tricky thing in there that they like left behind. But the reality is that Bitcoin is at this point extremely well studied, extremely well understood, and it's developed by essentially, you know, the code's all open. People who understand Bitcoin can look at any part of Bitcoin. There doesn't seem to be any room in the design for a kill switch.
That's exactly what an undercover Mossad agent with a kill switch in his brain would say.
That's right. Yeah.
I think, like, I don't know. I haven't looked into it super, super deeply, but just like the idea that like the CIA was working on cryptography at a certain time, and that there might have been like that Satoshi or some of the early people could have been sort of like rogue people that were working on it. Like
the CIA, the NSA, they've never produced like a new piece of technology like that. I don't think.
I don't know. We need to have Mark Goodwin on the pod to break this one down.
Yeah.
In any case, like I'm not afraid of that. Like I think it's kind of interesting, yeah, like as a possibility.
Yeah.
Like I'm intrigued by that Bitcoin origin story. I'm not really perturbed by it though.
Yeah, I really think Bitcoin was the work of like a lone random hacker, essentially. Like that's my model for it. It's people have a lot of theories about who created Bitcoin, either specific people or this kind of like CIA created Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. When in reality I actually think that there are many, many people who could have created Bitcoin, and most of them are very much unknown. Somebody who just had this sort of this breakthrough of this like proof of work is creating a, you know, history of events, and somebody sufficiently technical
like Craig Wright.
I mean, Craig Wright is too busy.
I love that
getting
people,
fucked by dogs.
I like.
So.
I love that people say that you're Craig Wright's son.
Yeah,
do you see that?
Yeah, they're just, you know, BSVers. They're not very
it's
smart.
So funny. You're not that much. Like, how old is Craig Wright?
He's like 50, 55.
Yeah, it's kind of a compliment, honestly, like that they think you're that much younger than him.
Yeah, I guess
like,
so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Chad Wright, am I right? I don't know. I think at one point we had it on our list to do an episode of like Satoshi lore, mm-hmm, like who Satoshi could possibly be. I think we would need like a guest that really had thought about it.
Yeah.
But like,
I
don't feel strongly anyway. Like I understand what you're saying. Like, oh, it could just be a random person. I also could see, I like when people do like the, like the way that he phrases stuff kind of analysis, like looking through his posts and stuff. I enjoy that kind of lore.
Mm-hmm.
For me, like Satoshi could be a dude. It could be like one of the kind of hot individuals that people think are options. It could be the CIA. I also, for a while before I really knew what Bitcoin was, my theory was that Satoshi is the first like self-aware AI, and it created something to harness human greed for its own power.
Sort of like the Matrix.
You put power into it and it just grows stronger and stronger, and you give it this stupid little coin token that you're like, give me, but you're just feeding energy into the Satoshi AI that's just like building itself up.
You know, aside from the Jews, you know, maybe it could be the Muslims.
That created Bitcoin?
Yeah, because...
No,
because
there's Islam coin.
No,
right?
I don't think Islam coin is really a legitimate representation of
it's like halal or whatever.
No, no, but the thing is that Bitcoin is halal, and Muslims have many...
Cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Bitcoin...
Is it kosher?
Yeah, there's nothing... I mean, I had this discussion with a rabbi. If you run a Bitcoin mine, you have to not benefit from the profits of it during Shabbos.
Oh, well, that's tough. So you have to power it down?
No. You just have a goy like who is
on staff.
Yeah, you could do something where actually you pre-sell all of your hash rate on Sunday to a goy. So you're like not technically benefiting from it. Or if you have goy partners, you could have them take the profits on Sunday.
We could do that.
Yeah, we could.
I could be the goy.
Yeah, and I'm absolutely Shomer Shabbos, chowing down on ham just a few moments ago. Sharia, Islamic law has a lot of prohibitions on lending, any sort of interest-bearing loans. And so, you could imagine that if somebody was a very forward-thinking Muslim, that they created Bitcoin in order to sort of displace the existing very much interest in loan-based financial systems and currencies.
That's a great point. This is the solution to the Israel-Palestine conflict.
How so? How would that work?
Bitcoin fixes this.
Yeah, Bitcoin fixes this. Yeah.
What is the deal with, like, Jews in lending? Wasn't that a thing, like, early on, that, like, the Jews could or couldn't lend?
No, yeah,
and
Jews,
that's why they became, like, associated with that? What
yeah,
was that?
Well, there were prohibitions on usury, the sort of technical religious term for lending. Christians, I believe, were completely prohibited from engaging in usury. Jews can only not engage in usury with other Jews.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. So, but then you would have a court Jew or factor who
a
sort
court
of,
Jew.
Yeah, who did all of the loans in the court. And the Rothschilds are descended from one very, very influential
That's
court
crazy.
Jew.
Crazy.
Yep. Yep. They
wow.
were. Yeah. So you were like a good Christian. You couldn't
that sounds
engage
like,
in usury.
That sounds like anti-Semitic.
It's 100% true. It's 100% true. Yeah. Yeah. And the Rothschilds were like the richest family in the universe like a few years ago.
Yeah. Now it's like.
A few years ago being like the 1800s.
They're still really rich, right?
They're still really rich, but the fortunes of the Rothschilds family have been split among.
Oh, that's how it
heirs.
Always goes. That's yeah. that's the story of old money.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on.
Yep.
Next one: government attacks. What's the quote? The first they laugh at you thing. What was that quote?
Yeah. So Bitcoiners always like to say, you know, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. In terms of, you know, what Bitcoin is going to do in the future, and I think we're sort of in the middle of the. First, the laugh at you, fight you kind of phase.
Mm.
I don't think we've really seen any serious opposition or hostility from governments.
Not seriously, at least not the U.S. government.
I think, yeah. I mean, some from China.
Yeah,
but,
right.
But all the hostility that we get in terms of like shitty regulation and like stupid tax treatment, all that stuff is just like normal government incompetence. There really hasn't been any actual...
Intelligent,
hostile, like principled... attacks against Bitcoin. And I think, you know, I think those will happen probably. I think we'll win. But I think after we win, that's actually when things get really, really weird. Because at that point, Bitcoin will be a major component of global power and global finance. And that will be the point at which very powerful vested interests who will not go away just because Bitcoin has won. Nation states will not go away. They still can tax. They still have the monopoly on violence in their territory. They still have all this power. That is when Bitcoin will be something that not only do they're past fighting it, but they will want to co-opt it, right? With like very, very like hostile regulation over time or corrupting regulation over time. You know, you can imagine like very, very slowly making it very hard to self-custody Bitcoin,
yeah.
Or making the sort of ring fence around the regulated Bitcoin and the unregulated Bitcoin very, very hard to get through. And also just having a vested interest in Bitcoin, you know, acquiring lots of hash rate, trying to control the supply or the distribution of Bitcoin, and not from a, like, they fight you phase, but like a, they try to co-opt you phase. And that I think is going to be weird. I think that's when we get into like very weird territory. You know, when reserve banks, national banks hold a significant amount of Bitcoin in reserve, and it becomes essentially a target of public policy. I think that is going to be very strange.
Co-opt, do you just mean that like they're involved, they're in the game, they're trying to like accrue hash rate? Is that what you mean?
Trying to accrue hash rate, trying to accrue Bitcoin, trying to manipulate the price, just having a vested interest in it and then doing weird ass shit with things that they have a vested interest in it, like in like governments are want to do.
Yeah, I guess that's already just like so the case that it's hard for me to even be like afraid of that future.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, like the current financial system is just like completely at the whim of like a government interest rate.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Absolutely.
So for me, it's like that still wouldn't be nearly as bad as like fucking fiat hell world that we're in.
Yeah.
Like they can try. Like that's what I mean. Like they can try. It just seems like their powers will be so significantly diminished that it still would be a better situation than the current one.
Yeah. I don't know how diminished their powers will be in a Bitcoin has won future. I think a lot of Bitcoin.
Well, if Satoshi's the CIA, then they have a lot of Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's right. Or if the Jews are Satoshi and they Satoshi's, have a lot of Bitcoin.
Satoshi is the Jews.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, good for Mazel, you know?
What was I going to say? Oh, yeah, but I don't think that Bitcoin will that diminish government power. You know, governments are based on the ability to tax, the monopoly on violence, the ability to lend, to borrow, and the ability to print money. And if the ability to print money goes away, I don't think it means that fiat currencies go away.
Yeah.
Like, governments will just need to temper their money printing. But they can probably still get away with a small amount of inflation every year. And as long as Bitcoin stays, you know, to some degree volatile, people will still prefer fiat currencies above Bitcoin.
Well, that's what I mean in terms of like being afraid of an outcome where like the government is trying to co-opt Bitcoin. It's like it still seems like it would be better than the current
Certainly.
Situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's still tempering the current situation, which is like, cool, yep. good. Yep. Anything that results in like a slightly more positive future, I'm like, that's okay.
Absolutely.
You know? Yep. Next one, breakdown of consensus. / hard forks / community is stupid.
Yeah, I mean, I'm
very afraid of this.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we sort of talked a little bit, a couple episodes on like history of hash forks and history mm-hmm. of Bitcoin, and it's definitely true that Bitcoin is getting harder and harder to modify, for good and for ill. And also, you know, this could be part of the vested interest. Like, once you have really massive vested interest trying to push Bitcoin one way or another, you know. Imagine, you know, 100 very, very competent open source programmers who are paid very highly by the government to contribute to Bitcoin and try to move it in one direction or another.
Fork boys.
Yeah, fork boys.
This is D's term.
Oh, yeah?
Fork boys.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So, like, you know, I'm not so worried about hard forks, but I'm kind of more worried about it being impossible to improve Bitcoin.
I'm worried about community is stupid.
Mm.
I don't love the oligarchy vibes. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it matters yeah. like so much, mm-hmm. but I think it's a bad look.
Yeah.
Like
the current kind of oligarchy vibes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's fine. You know, mean, I'm like, whatever. In in Bitcoin developers, we trust.
Yeah. You know? You're just like sending to the mailing list being like, hey, I see that the ordinals BIP still hasn't
Fuck
gotten
you.
A BIP number.
Fuck you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's an interesting thing.
Could I get a BIP number, daddy?
This might, the ordinals BIP might actually be the camel that broke the hare's back or whatever, in terms of the feathers back or however that goes. They might start just giving BIP numbers away like candy and like they don't mean anything anymore just to like be like, okay.
Do you think they will? I don't know. It doesn't seem like anyone's even like acknowledging you.
No. People have acknowledged it. And I think the reasonable people see that there is an issue with the current way that the BIP repo is administered. You know, like they're just like, okay, well, we have a BIP editor who is essentially like very like political in his mm-hmm. like opinions. And that is at odds with the role of the BIP editor, who's supposed to be more of like a very basic gatekeeping and it's a sort of a functionary kind of role.
How could this be an attack on Bitcoin?
I know, right? these ads, you know, such as they are. Yeah, I don't know. I think that'll work
itself
out.
Yeah. It's just like, I think like it just in terms of like, it's just bad vibes. I don't like to see it.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe it's not, I'm not necessarily scared of it, but it is spooky.
Yeah,
spooky, it is spooky vibes, yep, you know. Yep. Next one, some as yet discovered bug or yet to be written.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So,
just a bug that has not emerged.
Yeah, and I think
for whatever reason.
Yeah, and I think the real risk of this is both bugs that maybe exist in the code base now but haven't been found. There could also be bugs. You know, every time you change code, there's a risk of introducing a bug. And mm-hmm. and Bitcoin is very subtle, and there's sort of like, Bitcoin is a spooky code base to touch already.
Yeah, true. Yep.
So I think that's definitely a possibility. You know, ideally these things can be minimized, but it's very hard. You know, the cryptography in Bitcoin is very subtle. The script evaluation rules are very subtle. It's written in C++, which is a very tricky language that invites bugs. So yeah, this is definitely a possibility, I think.
Wow. Okay. I didn't think you were going to be like so perturbed by that one.
Oh yeah. I think every programmer just knows like every,
bugs happen.
Yeah, every bugs happen and every program on Earth barely works. That's the state of programs. They barely work. And minor changes to those programs leave them with subtle bugs or not working at all, you know? So.
See, I just don't want to, I don't want to see it.
Yeah, yeah, let's move on then.
I'm like, that doesn't concern me. I'm not involved in that.
Yeah.
I trust someone else.
Yeah, yep. Yeah.
Not very self-sovereign of me.
No, it's fine. You got to, there's something called, okay, so in programming and computer science, there's something called an abstraction barrier or abstraction boundary. Where you have like this abstraction, which is like what you actually like care about and operate in. But then, you know, it's all turtles all the way down. That abstraction is relying on some other thing, you know, down below. Mm. Like I'm a software engineer, so all I do is write code, but that code actually has to run on physical hardware that
right.
I don't fully understand. And, but there is what I like to call the don't care abstraction barrier, which is you're just like, yeah, I don't give a shit about anything below that. Like, I'm a programmer, so like if it's a 1 or a 0, that's like what I have to deal with.
Right.
If it's like 0.5, if some fucking voltage that's not 1 or 0, it's like 0.5, I'm like, yeah, I don't give a shit. That's all down there in the hardware. So that's how it is for everybody. The world is too complicated. You can't understand everything. So everybody has their area of expertise, and they're like, everything other than that, I just don't understand in detail.
Right, right.
Yeah. My godfather is a programmer. And one time we were driving somewhere and he told me that he remembers the exact moment when computers got complicated enough that he couldn't understand or know everything that was happening in the computer anymore. He was like, he noted it. You know, one day it had enough memory and the operating system had gotten complicated enough. And he was like, oh, like, I guess like that's it for understanding the whole thing top to bottom.
Damn.
Yeah. And things have only gotten worse. I mean, well, or more complicated. Like my computer, like my Mac laptop is fantastically complicated. The software is fantastically complicated. The hardware is fantastically complicated. The services that it interacts with over the internet are fantastically complicated. So yeah, listen, it's turtles all the way down, and you can understand one turtle or 1.5 turtles, like max.
I think as long as you have a sense of humility and wonder at that, then you can work with it.
Yeah,
as opposed to sort of like hubristically ignoring it and like pretending like you can master it without knowing it. It's like if you don't truly know like all the mysteries of like the computer, or the universe, or the whatever, you kind of have to have that like humility going into it.
It actually kind of makes me, I think it's a very sweet feeling actually. It kind of gives you a sense of the collaborative nature of the human endeavor. Everything works, even though I only understand and can influence a very, very small part of it.
Yeah.
And so that means all those other things that I don't understand, you know, hardware, physics, chemistry, manufacturing, fine pottery, is all done by somebody else who cares about it and understand it very well.
All we can do is this.
Yeah. Yeah. And yet it continues. yet it goes continues. On.
Next one. This one actually does worry me. Private key loss. Normies not understanding there's no password reset.
Yeah.
I don't think most people should self-custody.
I agree. Yeah. And like, I think Bitcoiners are
like, maybe I shouldn't even like, I will because like, whatever, I'm a fucking sovereign individual, but like, I don't like it.
Yeah. 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 I think Bitcoiners are way, way too optimistic about what percentage of people can ultimately self-custody Bitcoin.
I think they're optimistic about themselves self-custodying. Like, I don't think they really have thought it through.
Yeah. And the no password reset is like, oh, it's rough. You know what I mean? Obviously, it can't be any other way, but it's crazy to think of random people self-custodying Bitcoin.
I think we need to come up with better, like, myths or like divination techniques for passing down a seed phrase.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
you know, like I think like just having like the list of words and being like, okay, like write it down and bury it, or don't write it down and whatever. Like, you know, it's just having I think we need something that's like a story. Like there needs to be some, you know, like an oral history kind of tradition that goes along with it that like makes it so that like one could decipher a seed phrase if they really like, I don't know. There are people that would say, don't even do that. Like, but it's like, what the fuck is the alternative at some point?
I think actually maybe the thing that maybe doesn't get everybody self-custodying, but gets more people self-custodying is very, very simple to operate, very, very limited hardware, which has extremely good UIs that eliminate the manual steps that a lot of people have to do. So imagine something, you know, like a piece of hardware that imagine like a hardware wallet where when you want to withdraw to it from it, you sort of touch it with some other thing that like, you know, through some sort of like a short range connection, like authenticates it and sends it some, you know, signed transaction with like some amount of funds, like withdrawing it directly to that device without having to do too much, you know, dealing with seed phrases or whatever, or a hardware wallet where let's say you want to have multiple physical backups. Again, you touch them together and then you sort of clone one hardware wallet into another.
And but isn't that bad for OPSEC?
No, it's not just bad for OPSEC. It's bad for security. How do you make a device that can be cloned safely?
Yeah.
But I think that with a lot of thought and a lot of careful design, we might be able to come up with Bitcoin hardware that behaves a little bit more like physical objects, you know, in their sort of behaviors that you can sort of understand like physical objects instead of being these essentially computers where you're directly exposed to part of the workflow and directly exposed to some of the cryptography and concepts.
Yeah. I think myths and riddles.
Yeah. Or think of a piece of a hardware wallet that like initially comes all attached. You know, they're all physically attached to each other and you initialize them together in a very simple way. Mm. And then you just physically break them apart and move them into different locations. And you must have three, but the process of, you know, for example, doing multi-sig is like, oh yeah, you actually just get three of them and reattach them. And then it makes a transaction and it doesn't have to go through some computer, have these like partially signed steps, you know. It's much more akin to manipulating physical objects, such that you could draw simple diagrams about what you do at each step. Like get these things, put them together, like press okay, put them apart again. Or get one sort of like master device that you bring to your shards, you touch it to the shard gives you one component, you go to the other one, you touch it to another shard, it gives you the next signature, you touch it to the third shard, it gives you the third signature, and then you plug it into your computer and it just transmits the transaction.
I think we need effectively a medicine man for the village that like keeps the keys and like custodies the things, and like they would be like Da Vinci coding like this whole
I think
catacomb labyrinth to access the Bitcoin.
I think
only they know, and then they pass it down to their apprentice.
Yeah, but what if they die, or what if they turn evil?
If they die, well, okay, if they turn evil, there's not much you can do. They're evil.
So that's,
if they die, there needs to be some sort of, as I said, Da Vinci code ass way that someone with the proper, like, the true inheritor of the keys.
How do you know who the true inheritor of the keys
is? It's just one of those bestowed things. Like if you read
books,
it's like how did like Harry Potter do it?
The Harry Potter, the Hogwarts model of Bitcoin security.
I think it could be anons with like anime profile pictures. Like I'm not saying it has to be physically in person.
This sounds really well thought out. I think we can just go ahead and implement this. All of this like social recovery stuff strikes me as being very spooky. Very spooky. You just create these weird points of failure. You create like, okay, well then you're all trusting the one guy in the village, but then the one guy in the village, Bitcoin price goes up. All of a sudden he's custodying, or she, or a trans cat girl, most likely, is all of a sudden custodying a ton of money and takes the money and goes away, you know?
Well, what's a bank? I mean, like, what is a Bitcoin bank? Like, how do you make it more, like, because you trust a Bitcoin bank theoretically, right?
No.
You don't?
No.
I thought you were into banks.
What do you mean? No. I mean, I think that to some extent they're like Bitcoin banks are inevitable, but I think they have all the same problems of existing banks. They're just going to happen, you know? I mean, yeah, I guess, you know, that relies on sort of like...
Can you do proof of reserves? No, right?
Sort of. You can do proof of reserves and then you can do some attempts at proof of liabilities. It helps. You know, it's not a bad idea.
I don't know. At some point, I'm just like, I don't think you can do 100% security. Like, that's just not the way that life works. Like, you can't guarantee anything in life. You have to trust a little.
Yeah, I think you can do pretty well with this, like, sci-fi Bitcoin hardware, which has, like, very simple workflows.
With the trans cat girl with the anime profile picture. Yeah. Custody.
Dude, trans cat girls make the internet run, all
it's
right?
It's true.
So the next one is physical Bitcoin attacks from J Lops.
Did you look at the list?
No.
It's pretty scary. It's a long document, like J Lop. Jonathan Jameson Lop?
It's actually, no, it's Scandinavian, so it's a soft J.
Jameson?
It's Yalop.
Yalop?
Yeah.
Do you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do. No, yeah, James Lopp. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Okay, so he has a list on, I think, GitHub or something that's like a list of documented physical Bitcoin attacks where people mm-hmm. murder, attack, rob, whatever, with like the date, how much, like who, and then it's like linked to an article if there's like an article, and it's like pretty fucking extensive.
Yeah, I think that becomes a reality. It's very scary. Like, I mean, you feel safe most of the time, but bad OPSEC can mean that, you know, bad people in another country all of a sudden know that somebody has a massive Bitcoin stash and they don't know their name. They know where they live. And then, you know, yeah, they go kill them. And it can be somebody, I mean, you could have very, very sophisticated sort of like crime syndicates that, you know, another scary thing about physical Bitcoin attacks where somebody comes to take your Bitcoin is they don't leave a big footprint. They're not like a, you know, drug cartel or a racketeering organization or some group that has a very large physical footprint, which makes them kind of easier to police and find, right? You could have a very scary group that doesn't have any particular headquarters, and every once in a while, somebody gets tortured and murdered and their Bitcoin gets taken in different incidents all over the world that you just can't link back to this one group, right?
Yeah, well, that's what I was saying about like these people that like they start the conversation by saying they've been in Bitcoin since 2013. I'm like, literally don't tell me that.
Yeah,
like it's bad OPSEC. Like, don't go around flaunting that. Like, especially not like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, one thing is actually a lot of people who are in Bitcoin since 2013 have shockingly little
Bitcoin. We'll say that, like, but I feel like when they say it, they're like kind of trying to flex. You know what I mean? Like, I think like I have not been in Bitcoin since 2013. I am not worth robbing, in mm-hmm. my opinion. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, do you worry? I mean, both of us are doxxed, right? And this is why people don't dox. They get scared about stuff like this, right?
Yeah, I don't worry. My Bitcoin is hard to get and probably not enough to be worth taking.
Yeah.
And like, I think that trying to be undoxxed is very, very hard. I think that it really places limits on what you can do. I mean, I think there
you certainly can't dress up for Halloween for your podcast.
No, but also a lot of people who are quote unquote undoxed or anon, they have an online persona that it's a little hard to go just from the online information to their personal information, but they go to events and they have all these internet friends who all know who they are. There's very few people who actually operate as being fully undoxed. Fully anon, where they're also anon in their personal lives. I mean, vanishingly few people. Like Satoshi is like Satoshi and a small handful of others are the only ones who do that.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I don't know who Leonidas is, but probably some people do. Just
probably a lot
me.
Of people do. Yeah, probably, I think me. They meet him in person, you know?
I don't think he goes to events,
really?
Actually. I don't think he does. I think he like actually stays kind of low-key. I think it's like, I kind of understand why people don't like, they maybe give like a fake name or they mm-hmm. don't give their full name. Like, and they kind of have this like in between where if someone really tried, they could figure it out. But like, they kind of just like keep it low key. Yeah.
I mean, it is true that a little bit of good OPSEC, makes the dumbest people saves you from the dumbest people.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like I can kind of understand just making it a little hard, like throwing people off the trail a little bit, like that can help. Ship's already sailed.
Ship's already sailed.
So
I think the future where there are these like, the cyberpunk future where there are these very powerful like assassination gangs that slowly amass more and more Bitcoin and just operate in the shadows and like just some random Bitcoiner like home invasion got tortured, you know, pretty weird, you know, and nobody's able to really put the pieces together, and they're getting more and more and more Bitcoin.
See, that's where I want the village monk that...
Who gets assassinated, and then they take the Bitcoin from the village monk.
But I don't want to get tortured. Like, to me, like...
You just want somebody else to get tortured.
Yeah, I don't want to get... Like, I think, like, there's worse things than losing your stack.
Yeah, true.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to be, like, traumatized. Like, I feel like that's what... When Kim Kardashian got robbed at gunpoint in Paris, that's the lesson I learned from that. Yeah. Like, you just give them the jewels.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yep. Moving on.
Next one, stable coins.
Yeah, next one, stable coins. So, yeah, I mean, there is a big risk if there is a large asset on Bitcoin, which is controlled by some other entity. In the case of stable coins are these sort of ersatz US dollars that trade on cryptocurrency rails, but they have ultimately an issuer who issues and redeems the stable coin. Issues in exchange for US dollars, redeems in exchange for US dollars, the stablecoin. So they ultimately have a lot of power. For example, in a fork choice situation where you have two Bitcoin forks and all of a sudden the balances of the stablecoins are duplicated across both forks. And if there's a large enough stablecoin issuer, they're not going to, you know, allow people to withdraw Bitcoin from both US dollars from both sides of the fork. So they might wind up blessing one side of the fork or the other, and thus exerting a lot of control over future soft forks and hard forks.
I think like stable coins are definitionally spooky.
Yeah.
Like that's very, it's very spooky vibes. We definitely need to have Mark on to talk about his book at some point. Yeah. Cause this is the Bitcoin dollar thesis, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think, you know, I kind of am of a couple minds about stablecoins. I understand that it's like people want what they want. Mm-hmm. Like, if someone wants access to the US dollar and not Bitcoin, of course, I don't begrudge someone for wanting that, you know, and I wouldn't want to, like, take that away from them. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I do think the more that, like, Mark has Bitcoin dollar pilled me, the more that, like, I see the way that certain people talk about it, and I'm like, it's a little suspicious.
Yeah, it's pretty weird.
It's spooky.
Yeah, it's spooky. Yeah. I ultimately think in the Bitcoin win scenario, like as the price goes up, volatility should decline.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, stablecoins will become less and less desirable because you don't need to hedge against the volatility.
Right.
Yeah. But stablecoins also have the same problem as custodians, large custodians of large amounts of coins. I guess they don't have as much power. They do have some power over the fork choice situation by saying which, you know, you have some part of the financial system and they're all using custodians and they decide which fork they're going to be on, even if they're just using Bitcoin.
Yeah. It's spooky.
Yep. Very spooky.
Next one, mining centralization.
Yeah, mining centralization, always an issue. Yeah. Especially because chip manufacturing is very, very centralized.
Mm.
If governments wanted to control hash rate, there are a small number of entities that produce the chips that go into ASICs. I think Samsung, TSMC, maybe another one or two that I'm forgetting. And so these are very large entities with a very large footprint in the physical world, and the government could literally just make it illegal for them to sell mining hardware or make it illegal to sell mining hardware outside of regulated channels.
I think like okay, yes, true, that's something that is particular to Bitcoin, but I feel like TSMC is sort of an example of something that's like, it's like a bottleneck single point of failure that would fuck up a lot, like if TSMC just like stopped, if it got nuked or like whatever, or if China took it over and then decided like we're not giving any, whatever, like some scenario where TSMC is sort of like taken out of the equation, like it's bad news like all around. I think
there's a scenario where TSMC, Samsung, et cetera, are allowed to continue as per normal, except in the case of
saying like there's sort of like a, there's a specific kind of situation here that has to do with like sort of legality and regulation. But I also just think generally speaking, like this is something that spooks me about the world in general, is just like kind of these bottleneck points of failure around our supply chain that just
somebody posted something on Twitter, which was incredibly apt, that Taiwan is like Arrakis, the one source of spice in the
right.
in the galaxy, mm-hmm. which is the Taiwan is the home of TSMC, currently, you know, contested territory by the Chinese. US is allied against the Chinese, protecting Taiwan to some degree. Very apt, instant retweet.
Yeah.
Yep.
Next one, apathy of the masses.
Yep.
That one I'm not so worried. Well, that one like makes me sad, right? Yeah. Like that one's not so much spooky as like, it is a little spooky, I suppose, but mm-hmm. it's more like I think that there are one thing I've really realized in like, you know, trying to orange pill people in my life is mm-hmm. like the issue is not getting them to understand the issues of fiat even. Mm-hmm. A lot of them don't know.
Yeah.
But like I can explain it to them in a mm-hmm. way that they can understand. Yeah. Usually if I have enough time and it's a smart enough person.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is getting them to believe that something could be better.
Mm.
Like there's a lot of people that are really, I wouldn't say happy, but they're content to be completely unhappy with the possible outcomes for the future,
mm-hmm.
Where they think things are headed, the potential that technology could ever solve anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just think there are a lot of people who are really married to their own unhappiness, and those people like are completely fine to just be like, actually, I think we talked about this a long, long time ago. Like, you know, you made the point that like people are mostly logical actors, and if it's financially advantageous for them to adopt Bitcoin, they will.
Yeah, I think incentives take care of this.
People are
apathetic, and then all of a sudden, everybody has relatively easy access to Bitcoin. Number go up. You want to buy something? It's priced in Bitcoin. You get Bitcoin. I'm not worried about.
I disagree. I think people are so easily propagandized, and like I think they genuinely will act against their own best interests just if you do enough psychological manipulation.
I think I mean, not to just, you know, harp on disagreeing, but
fight.
Like, yeah, we should fight. I mean, let's see how that goes. But Aaron would kick my ass.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a feminist. I couldn't
you couldn't even hit
her.
Me yeah,
yeah. I couldn't even hurt. But no, I mean, like, I think people's revealed preferences are often at odds with their little story that they tell themselves. Like, there are so many people who are woke as fuck or anti-capitalist as fuck or whatever as fuck. And if you look at what they actually do, they do what everybody else does. They shop on Amazon, they consume the same media. Like, they tell themselves a little story about how they're buying some fucking figs made of some not figs, what the fuck am I talking about? Buying some straws made out of like leaves or whatever. Just they're like plus one for the environment. They're driving the same cars as everybody else, wearing the same clothes as everybody else, having the same lifestyle as everybody else, because they're incentivized to buy on Amazon and buy shit that is like bad for the environment, or that people say is bad for the environment, and they're gonna crumble like a fucking wet paper hat once the incentives align for them to adopt Bitcoin. And they're going to make up a fucking story about how it's good. They're going to make up a story about how Bitcoin is like woke money or good for the environment money. And it's going to be all good.
Wow. You roasted them.
They're easy to roast.
Yeah. I mean, I guess like, but that relies on, you know, in the case of like Amazon, it's like mm-hmm. Amazon not only is like such an effective service, but it also just kind of has the money to like reach all of its tentacles into mm-hmm. your life and take it over. Like Bitcoin mm-hmm. doesn't have a marketing department. It's not a company. Like I
but
do think
there are
some
companies
level
with marketing departments who will benefit from people adopting Bitcoin.
Like,
you know,
who?
Amazon.
Amazon will benefit from people adopting Bitcoin?
Yeah.
I feel like Amazon is a beneficiary of the money printer.
No, Amazon will
Amazon is definitely a beneficiary of a debt economy.
Large online retailers will find it convenient to accept payment in Bitcoin.
Maybe if Bitcoin's high.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see like just like boom cycles.
Yeah, and also being like, oh, yeah. Places like river.com, you know, which is a fine service for buying
River
and selling
sponsors.
Bitcoin.
We should get sponsors.
I don't want sponsors. Like, I want to be able to say whatever the fuck I want, you know?
Well, we could get sponsors.
Although,
that let us say whatever the
Leishman,
fuck we want.
The CEO of River, is pretty base, so he probably wouldn't give a shit
like
what I said.
I feel like we could find the right ones.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Ongoing discussion behind the scenes at Help Money Pod.
BTS. this one's Randall. This is quote because I didn't know what it was.
Uh-huh.
We don't actually know that the digital signatures and hashes that we use are secure. We don't know of anyone to break any way to break them. And we think that nobody else knows, but we aren't actually sure. Can you even tell me what that means?
Absolutely. So there's a very odd property of a lot of cryptography and a lot of hashes that there is no proof in the mathematical or computer science sense that they are secure. So we have a hash function where you go from some input to some output. And we have tried very hard to break these hash functions, for example, SHA-256, which is used in Bitcoin, but we don't have a proof that SHA-256 cannot be broken.
Oh, that's cool. Someone should like do a PhD on that.
Everybody's doing PhDs on that. Tons of people.
They can't figure it out.
Can't figure it out. Similar to elliptic curve cryptography, we think that reversing a signature or reversing encryption is very hard, but we do not have a mathematical proof. There are other things that we have, you know, mathematical proofs for, you know, but basically the deal with cryptography is somebody comes out with a cryptography scheme and it becomes popular or interesting enough that people are incentivized to try to break it. Lots of people study breaking it. They study applying old attacks that were used on previous crypto schemes to this new crypto scheme. And eventually we just, as those attacks fail and enough clever people have looked at it, we start getting confidence that it is secure. But we don't have a proof. We just don't have a proof. Like, we don't have a proof that the elliptic curve cryptography in Bitcoin is secure. So this is just the point that they're actually in this sort of interesting kind of precarious situation.
Do you think that there is a proof and we just haven't found it?
No, because I think we've tried to look for a proof like that, but haven't.
But sometimes it's just a stroke of genius, no?
I kind of don't think so, although that's very much my uninformed opinion. I think the nature of these things is like these kind of like these one-way functions that you're like, yeah, I guess, like a proof that you couldn't unmix paint, you know?
A proof that you couldn't, yeah, right. It's an obvious thing experimentally.
Yeah.
Or like in practice.
People often liken cryptographic operations to mixing paint. You know, you have a paint, white paint and red paint and blue paint. You mix them up and you get purple paint. And we think it's very hard to go back from the purple paint to the red and blue paint.
Could you actually not make a proof of that? That seems like you could prove it. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe not like an actual proof. I guess proofs are very like particular.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like maybe you could explain it in a way that would like make sense, but it wouldn't necessarily be like a proof.
Right. I mean, there's some intuition about how it's very hard.
Right.
Right. But a proof is a challenge.
Okay. Well, that's like, I actually am not spooked by that at all.
Yeah, I'm not spooked by that at all. That's just how cryptography seems to work. Get over it, Ryan.
Grow up.
And also there's also a ton of interest in breaking crypto, right?
Yeah, like,
lots
right.
of
it's
cryptographers
like,
try to break like each other's crypto all the time.
Doing it.
And the fact that these schemes look like they're secure kind of lends some credence that they are secure.
In general, I'm much more like...
You're like a society doomer. Not
what?
Like a technology doomer.
Yeah,
you're worried about social
I'm
stuff.
About
you're worried about the people. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm an autist, so I worry about things.
You are not
people.
Autistic.
Oh, I'm very autistic.
Do you think so?
No, not at
no,
all.
No, you're definitely not. I feel like you're kind of like, you're not like not perceptive like that.
Yeah.
You might be hyper fixated, but that's just like, that's just a good trait.
Right. Yeah.
That autists happen to also have.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I think like I in general, I prefer experimental out in the arena kind of model anyway. Like, like to me, like theory doesn't matter until you actually are able to test it. Like, yeah. I would rather have like something be attacked over and over and over again and no one's ever able to break it or whatever than to just have a proof that it can't be broken.
Yeah,
it's great if you can have both. But like to me, experimental is always preferable.
Yeah, agreed.
Next one, right. As we said, societal upheaval.
I think this is probably good for Bitcoin. I think Bitcoin is anti-fragile and, you know, what goes first in societal upheaval? The fiat money gets fucked up. And every time that a fiat money dies, Bitcoin starts to look a little better.
I think this is like when I get nervous because I see the Bitcoin price going up. Well, there's multiple factors. One factor that makes me nervous about Bitcoin price going up is I'm just like, I don't want an ordinals bull run yet. I'm scared of that.
Uh-huh.
The other thing is that it freaks me out the way that I I worry that my relationships with people will change. Mm. Not because I'm going to be fucking wealthy as hell. As I said, I'm not a 2013 Bitcoiner. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not... If, like, Bitcoin goes up to 60K, like, I'm not, like, peacing out to my private
this
island.
Is all
like,
in the, this is all in the sort of don't torture Aaron narrative.
Don't torture Aaron. It's
but I
not
mean,
worth it.
I mean, just being real, if somebody tries to torture Aaron, she's going to fold instantly.
I'm gonna,
you're
yeah,
not
yeah,
even... You're, like, you could tickle her feet. And she'd be like, I'll give you all
I'd
my
coins.
I'd
be like, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
No, I mean, like, I think, like, what freaks me out is, like, just the perception from normies or outsiders, mm-hmm. like, about Bitcoiners. Actually, I don't think I wrote this down, but one of the things that does freak me out is, like, Bitcoin people becoming, like, a new elite. Like, if the price of Bitcoin did really go up to the point that, like, you know, these major holders... are now some of the wealthiest people in the world. Like, that does freak me out just generally.
Yeah, I think maybe they're better than the old elite, but...
I don't think so. I don't even know.
Nah, but I mean, the sudden rise of a new elite is weird and potentially
the reason
scary.
Why I even say that I don't even think that they're better is that it's just like a very specific group, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't like the idea of a very particular... group becoming all of a sudden the wealthiest group.
I do love the idea of all these fucking lefties and communists getting fucking wrecked. Like, I remember...
Well, they already want to get wrecked.
Yeah.
That's like their ideology.
Yeah. I had a conversation with a friend of mine years and years ago, like in like 2017 or 16, or it might have been even earlier. Basically, she's like a super like commie leftist, like hates big corporations. And I was sort of telling her about Bitcoin, and she was like, oh, I don't care about that. And I was like, this is like a tool potentially wielded by your enemies. Like, don't you think that it behooves you to understand it, you know, even if it's from the point of view of like, how do I counter this? How do I subvert it? How do I co-opt it?
They don't care.
No interest whatsoever.
They don't want to know anything about economics or money or anything.
No,
they just, well, this is my point about some people are actually just completely okay being losers, and they actually prefer that because it fits their ideology.
I think
that the majority of people maybe know.
But in like, her case, she's not yet incentivized to understand Bitcoin, you know? So I think that she won't care about Bitcoin until she's incentivized to, and then she'll probably tell herself a story and adopt it.
Yeah, maybe.
And also, she also, you know, operates within the capitalist regime, you know, using the dirty colonizer blood money that is the US dollar. And she's like, yeah, but, you know, that's what I have to do.
That's true. I mean, well, I guess like something that worries me about societal upheaval is like along those lines is there's already this very strong narrative of resentment, at least in the US, you know, like the haves and the have nots.
Yep.
And like, I don't really think that like Bitcoin would have to go up a fucking lot for me at this point to become like, I think in like the upper class of haves, but like the perception, like no one knows how much I have. And like, even like my family members, like not like my parents or anything, but like, you know, aunts, uncles, cousins and stuff just see that I like am in this Bitcoin world and they like assume that I'm rich now.
Yeah,
they don't know. And I'm like, girl, like, like I'm podcasting out here for free, you know? but I think just that lack of understanding and perception and coupled with volatility and how volatility may also couple with societal instability.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a recipe there that leads to just, personally, I worry about like my relationships with normies who don't understand and like what their perception is of me and just an inability to kind of like prove them wrong,
yeah,
I guess.
Sure. Yeah.
And maybe some Bitcoiners get around this by never even talking to people that aren't Bitcoiners, but that's not my life.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we'll see.
I don't know. I worry about stuff like that.
Yeah.
And being doxxed and whatever. And I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
So I just hope like, I hope that it's not, I hope it's a steady cruise.
Yeah,
up,
definitely. Yeah.
You know,
I think a lot of Bitcoin is sort of thirst for upheaval, but I think upheaval is bad.
Well,
bad,
so
bad.
Do the lefties. So does anyone who really has like a radical ideology.
They're all trying to
accelerationism.
Immantize the
eschaton.
The eschaton. That's right. I would have pronounced that word correctly if you just given me half a second to say it.
Are you sure?
No. No, I was going to say like eschaton or some shit.
I'm kind of an accelerationist in some respects. Like I would say I'm a little bit of like a AI accelerationist where I'm just like, bro,
let's
just
party.
Rip it.
Yeah.
Like if it's going
to
come, like
I
let
was
me
talking
have
to the
it.
AI in cuneiform last night. getting it to tell me about how
having a sexy conversation late night with the AI
in cuneiform. Last one, Satoshi moving his BTC.
That would be a spooky ass move.
That'd be a spooky ass move.
What would you think?
I would not worry about quantum cryptography having happened, because I think that if you have a quantum computer, you don't move Satoshi's Bitcoin. You move some other Bitcoin that people blame on key management or something. You move some exchange's cold wallet, and then they go like, I guess we were hacked, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, hopefully Satoshi does something good with it, you know?
Satoshi moves his Bitcoin and donates to the Open Ordinals Institute to pay for Raph to work on Ord.
That's right.
He's like, you know, this Ordinals thing is pretty cool.
Yeah. I think Satoshi would like Ordinals and inscriptions.
I think so too.
Yeah, Satoshi was like pretty wacky. He had some wacky early ideas. He had this idea for atoms, mm-hmm. where each block would create an atom that would get credited to the person who mined the block. And in fact, independently of me knowing that, because I didn't know that for a while, the first version of Ordinals, they were called atoms.
And you didn't even know that? That it was connected? That.
Yeah. And it would hop from...
You guys are both channeling, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, we're channeling some kind of dark energy. To be clear, he's channeling something, and I'm channeling him, maybe just a little bit, like
1%. I think you're both channeling similar... So, you know, it's like you're getting access to like little pieces of the puzzle and the equation. And then for whatever reason, I don't know what Satoshi's deal is, but like, you're just like a weirdo who then makes it manifest. Right. Yeah. Like Satoshi's the same, presumably.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Satoshi would like, I don't know if Satoshi moved his Bitcoin.
I mean, I guess
I'd
be
a little bit like
heartbroken.
Like I'd be like,
Satoshi.
Our
daddy Satoshi.
Yeah, like our benevolent, you know, leader who disappeared.
I mean, I guess people are worried about the price tanking, but like, okay.
I don't
bunch
care
of,
about that. That's like, as I said, I don't even want the price to go up. Really.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, I, it would be spooky. I would definitely feel like an anxiety about like something to come. Like if Satoshi moved his Bitcoin and then there was like nothing, I'd be like, oh, fuck. Like when's the other shoe gonna drop? Something's gonna happen. Yeah. Like,
Last spooky thing. We're actually past the end of our list, but
you have another spook.
Yeah, one spook. Ordinals and inscriptions during a Bitcoin bull run.
I'm terrified of that.
Fucking wild. I mean, like, inscriptions popping off in the first place was fucking terrifying, right? But that was even during a bear market.
Yeah,
you know. So inscriptions popping off during a bull market. Wild, absolutely wild. I don't even want to think about what it's going to be like. People on the fucking GitHub, people on Twitter, people just degenerating out of their fucking minds.
That's what worries. Like, I mean, we were talking earlier about, you know, normies not understanding that there's no password reset. Like, degens not understanding that there's no password reset. Like,
right. Buying rare fucking sats. Like,
yeah. Like, I mean, I feel like ordinals. Well, I guess if you're using like these kind of like these wallets where you just like move stuff around and everything happens on the back end, you don't see it, then it's like, whatever. It's as long as those apps are well made, which is okay. You know, like,
listen,
as long as they're well made, then I guess like, you know, you don't necessarily have to do all this like self-custody kind of stuff, but I do feel like there's a decent amount of like understanding of how Bitcoin works that you should know if you're going to be degenning on inscriptions and
absolutely,
ordinals, right?
Absolutely. And like, degen on Bitcoin first, like get Bitcoin. I would never, I don't recommend rare sats or inscriptions as an investment to anybody.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so
it's a trinket.
Yeah. And also like, it's going to be insanely volatile. Like it's like getting into the, not just speculating, but the like the gambling territory, you know, buy Bitcoin, get your little stack, you know, if you want to degen 1% of it into inscriptions, like that's fine, but don't think of it as a substitute for buying Bitcoin. I guess maybe that's the scary thing, that like people will view like Bitcoin is popping off, but Bitcoin's price is already high, so there's not going to be that much volatility there. And they're like, oh, but I can get inscriptions, which are like alpha or beta on Bitcoin, right? Bitcoin goes up 1%, inscriptions go up 10%, you know? So that's a little
That's
worrying.
The real Bitcoin ETF.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. One thing that will be interesting, though, is I think that if there's another bull run, there will be a lot of people who, that's really when they get into Bitcoin, and they will have gotten into Bitcoin post ordinals and inscriptions yeah. existing. And they'll just think of it as a feature of Bitcoin. It's like a way of life, you know, that it's always been there and that it's part of Bitcoin.
I mean, I already feel the Bitcoin season two narrative is like so fucking strong, dude. Like yeah. no one even cares about being an ordinals hater at this point.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're just like being low key.
Yeah.
Like in Amsterdam, I mean, obviously I'm in my own bubble. Like obviously I was in the ordinals bubble in Amsterdam, but it really was like, the maxi anti-ordinals scene was like very deflated.
Yeah. I mean,
and a lot of them came to the party like, and they were like, I don't want anyone to know I'm here. And yeah. then they'd see each other and they'd be like, oh, like, what am I doing at the Taproot Wizards after party?
Yeah.
You know,
I'd like to really encourage Bitcoiners who don't like ordinals or who don't like inscriptions and are like really hostile and negative towards it. Like, Bitcoin is a big tent and you don't have to care or really have an opinion about everything that's happening in that tent.
Yeah.
You can just be like, yeah, ordinal is kind of stupid, whatever. Like you don't shit on people playing with Pokemon cards, right? Because like maybe it's kind of stupid, but you don't have to care about it. So,
or what about like drug dealers on the Silk Road? Like, you pissed yeah. about that?
Yeah. Like what about like, you know, if there, I don't know if there are any like dark net, like child pornography sites that use Bitcoin,
but in theory,
yeah, but there have been them in the in
prostitution,
the past. Yeah, and it's
anything,
like,
you know,
much worse things on are going to happen and are happening and have happened on Bitcoin that are not inscriptions or ordinals. Yeah. Inscriptions and ordinals are just like kind of in your face, but you really don't have to care about it.
No,
yeah,
no, but we do, and we that's do. Why I'm scared.
Yep.
Anything else?
No, I think that's it. I think we've reached the end of the episode.
Sufficiently spooked?
I'm feeling pretty good actually.
Yeah, I'm feeling better now.
Yeah.
I was scared about the bull run, but now I feel like it's kind of leveling off and
it's not leveling off. It's just started. Things are getting
literally
wacky.
Not ready.
Yeah.
Like I can't do this right now. But I can do Halloween.
Yeah.
This Halloween. Is just my first costume too. Like I'm not even I have more.
Yeah.
You know, not for the podcast.
This is my only costume. I'm going to be walking around in this to the
end.
No,
what about my party?
No, I'm just going to not wash until your party and then.
I think actually this would stay on.
Yeah, I think so.
You think you have to like have like a special like alcohol remover to get it off.
Big up to our makeup department. Our very talented
Thanks, Caroline.
Makeup artist. Did an amazing job.
Yeah. Yeah, it takes a whole village to put together the Halloween special of Hell Money Podcast.
So should we call it?
Yeah, let's call it.
Yep. Thanks,
Happy
everybody,
Halloween.
For joining. Happy Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and see everybody next time.
Bye.